Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 5th, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll learn more about Rock Juno. Author Nicole Stellan O'Donnell will preview her work and the Alaska Reads program. We'll get an update on the JPD with Police Chief Ed Mercer. And author Vivian Faith Prescott will highlight tonight's reading at the APK. Those interviews, national native news, bird note music, and more right here live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently sunny, clear skies, and 32 degrees here in the capital city.
With national native news, I'm Daisha Eaton in for Antonia Gonzalez. An artist is using her work to draw attention to the plight of missing and murdered Alaska Native women. KDLG's Avery Lill has more on how a Dillingham woman is drawing portraits to honor their memories and start conversations.
Alaska Native artist Amber Webb hand-stitched an oversized cussbook from white cotton sheets she bought at a thrift store. In permanent marker, she drew the faces of Alaska Native women who have been murdered or who are missing. Webb lives in Anchorage. She's originally from Dillingham. Six of the women featured on the cussbook are from Bristol Bay, four from Dillingham, one from Alaknegik, and one from Manicotic. Webb said that the plight of several area women in particular inspired her to create her work of art.
Valerie Ziftoff, she's still missing, and I know her family is still looking for answers about her disappearance. And then Lori D. Wilson as well. When I was young, my family spent a lot of time with Val's aunts. You know, seeing her family try to come to terms with having lost her that way, it's had a pretty profound impact on my life.
Webb hopes that her piece will encourage more people to join the conversation about preventing violence against Native women.
It's opening a conversation that has to be had by families, by law enforcement, by the academic community, legislators. I mean, I think all of Alaska has to kind of think about it.
Webb is making arrangements for a traveling exhibit, which she hopes to display in Dillingham and Anchorage. I'm Avery Lill in Dillingham, Alaska.
U.S. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke canceled sale of oil and gas leases near Chaco Canyon in northern New Mexico until the agency can determine the effect on nearby cultural artifacts. Zinke told the Albuquerque Journal that the Bureau of Land Management will halt the sale for now and issue an extensive cultural report. The sale was originally scheduled for this week. A group representing the state's 20 pueblos issued a resolution last fall calling for a moratorium on drilling in the region because it would disturb sacred and culturally important areas. Louise Erdick's 2013 book, The Round House, is the focus of a new series of discussions that just launched in Wisconsin. The events encourage reading among the public, but are also sparking conversations around the sexual assault of Native American women, a central theme of the book. Chuck Kernbach of Wisconsin Public Radio reports.
The National Endowment for the Arts Big Read program has teamed up with the University of Wisconsin system and the Lacouderie tribe to highlight The Round House. University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee English professor Kim Blazer is an enrolled member of the White Earth Nation. Blazer says Louise Erdrich's book, which is about a mother who has been raped, is a very timely work to discuss, given ongoing violence against Native women.
We had this long, frightening history of murdered and missing Indigenous women and a long path to try to figure out how to deal with these.
Blazer kicked off several big read events in the Milwaukee area with a reading of poems related to the themes of the Roundhouse. In one of her works, Blazer praised women's courage.
To devour fear, chew and swallow, and to cast their hearts for survival.
Lee Friedrich is the Wisconsin coordinator for the big read of the Roundhouse and works for a state campus in Rice Lake. She hopes the discussion of the book draws in a wide audience.
This topic of harassment, assault, it is on everybody's minds right now, and we need to kind of grasp this moment to come together.
The Wisconsin Big Read of Louise Erdrich's The Roundhouse continues through the end of next month. Erdrich is a member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
And I'm Daisha Eaton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, gateway to tribal colleges created by and for American Indians, accredited and local, with certificate programs to master's degree programs. Info at aihec.org. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country, and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juneau afternoon here on Monday, March 5th, 2018. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host today. Joining me here in Studio A now is Tressa Millam. She's a children's advocate at AWARE, and also Taylor Shea, an AEYC Early Literacy Outreach Coordinator and AmeriCorps volunteer. Welcome to the show, Tressa and Taylor.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's see. Tressa, should we start with you? You work at AWARE as a children's advocate. How does that relate to Rock Juneau?
Well, you know, as a children's advocate, my whole goal is to work with kids and help them have fun and have successful, happy childhoods. And Rock Juneau is all about raising our children with kindness. So I work with parents, I work with kids to help kids learn how to be kind to each other, to help other people learn how to be kind to kids, to help kids and parents and community members be a little bit more trauma-informed, especially when dealing with children. That is a large way to be kind to kids in our community, because a lot of us are impacted by trauma at a young age, and that carries with us throughout our life. And, you know, if we are able to learn how to be a little bit kinder or to look at things through a trauma-informed lens, in my opinion, you're really pushing that being kind to kids and being kind to community members in Juneau.
And you sort of spelled out the acronym of ROCK, right? It's mm-hmm. Raising Our Children with Kindness.
Yep.
Okay, and so as AWARE, you're one of the partners that
yes.
collaborates and helping out with ROCK. So is AEYC, right, Taylor?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is the Year of Kindness for Kids. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so last year the Juneau Police Department did a Year of Kindness in 2017, and ROCK, which is a relatively new collaboration in town, is kind of making their debut with this Year of Kindness that's focused on children. So ROCK is kind of aiming to improve access, equity, and resources for children in the community. So that's kind of what we're tying into with this Year of Kindness. We're contacting and getting in touch with different agencies in town, teachers, hearing what's going on in the schools, things like that, just to increase people's awareness of resources in the community, to encourage them to be kind to kids, and to kind of put the spotlight on how important that is. Kind of like Tress was saying, one of the biggest ways to do that is to look at reducing adverse childhood experiences and just helping kids live a happy, positive life. And that is what kind of the goal of this is. It's just to get out into the community, connect people with each other, connect agencies with each other, connect kids and families with resources and different things like that.
What can one of our listeners do to participate in the Year of Kindness for Kids?
There's many different things that you can do, and part of us coming on the radio show is to take a group of kids every month and highlight what are some actionable things that you can do for that particular group of kids. So this month we're all about elementary kids, so we're going to kind of get into what some actionable things are you can do for elementary kids in specific in Juneau. But aside from that, if you want to get invested with ROCK Juneau, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram. We are on both of those. And you can go to our website, which is rockjuneau.org. And you can send us an email and say, hey, I really want to get involved. I want to help do whatever. And it will come to one of us, and we'll be like, awesome. Here's what we could have you do.
And on the website and the Facebook page, we'll be continuously posting different things that are happening in town that you can volunteer at, or just different ways that
you can participate in spreading kindness to kids. And included in that on our website, we have a document that we've made that is 100 plus 18 ways to be kind to young people. It's a big, long list of actionable things that anyone can do, whether you have your own kids, whether you're just a community member. There's just lots of different options on there as well.
You have it in front of you, right? Would you mind reading a couple of your
favorites? So we're hoping to have this kind of little booklet printed out and made so that we can kind of pass them out around town for those that haven't been on our website. But we have, like, number 68 is sing to your child. Number 34, write a quick thank you note to your child's school office assistants and librarians because they're awesome people. Number 104, identifying feelings. Name for children their difficult feelings such as frustration and anger and encourage them to talk to you about why they are feeling that way.
One of my favorites is getting out on the trails with your kids around,
yeah,
you know.
It's that simple. Just spending time and, yeah, going on adventures and exploring is just really important. So.
And so that's 118 of those tips.
Yes. Yeah.
And
they,
like you said, I like the word actionable. Those do seem very accessible and easy to do.
Yep, they're for anyone, and they're right on our website. So.
And it sounds like that's the first thing you want interested parties to do is to get a hold of you at your website and on social media. That's step one right
now.
Yeah,
that's where all of our information is. All of our connections are really being made. We're going out into the community, but for the community to come to us, that social media page and using our hashtag RockJuno would allow us to get connected with anyone in the community that wants to participate.
And I remember as part of the 2017 Year of Kindness that the police department spearheaded, that was a big part of it, was hashtagging these events or these actions, and you're able to share them that way. Is that what you're going after as well?
We do kindness like spotlights, stories that we hear from the community, from people who have ways that people have been kind to kids. Another big part of that is we are making kindness ambassador buttons, which are really, really, really fun. We're getting artwork submission from anybody and everybody in the community who would like to help us make those buttons. And then we take that picture and I just put kindness ambassador 2018 on top of the picture and make it into a button. And we pass those out to people who are spotted being kind and doing kind things for kids in town. So watch out for those buttons, or help us make some artwork for the buttons, or do something nice and let us know about it, and we'll send you a button.
So that's the voice of Tressa Millam. She is a children's advocate at AWARE, and Taylor Shea, who you heard earlier, AEYC Early Learning Outreach Coordinator. So AEYC, AWARE, who are some of your other partners under the ROCK umbrella?
For the month of elementary age kids, we have reached out to some different people in the community just to get feedback from them. One of them was the JAM program, which stands for Juno Alaska Music Matters. It's a tuition-free music program for elementary age kids. They're doing some really good work. They're teaching kids like leadership skills and those sorts of things through music. And again, another actionable thing, they're hoping to be saving some money for some recording equipment and different things like that, setting up a studio of sorts. So that's definitely an actionable item that people in the community can contribute to. We've reached out to Big Brothers Big Sisters, got some information from them. There's currently 65 matches in Juno, which it's just like a mentorship program, an adult that gets paired with a kid. And they just spend some time together. They ask for like a 1-year commitment, but they're always looking for matches as well.
And then, as someone who has volunteered for them many times, I can tell you it is one of, if not the most rewarding thing you'll ever do
program.
With kids.
Yeah. And then AWARE has some children's programming as well.
Yeah. So AWARE, we sponsor the Boys Run Tuwak Klatsin and Girls on the Run programs. And those are elementary aged programs, and they are all about lifting up kids and being leadership people in our community, and being fitness oriented and running and getting invested with that, and really learning how to be good, kind people, and how to, I mean, they're both a slightly different program. You know, the girls program is all about girl empowerment and stuff, and the boys program is also boys empowerment, but a lot of like how to raise our men with kindness in our community, especially with AWARE, our focus being domestic violence, teaching the next generation of boys to become great, strong leaders and independent, great men in our community.
Okay. That's Tressa Millam. You can find her at Rock Juno, Raising Our Children with Kindness. Website again is?
rockjuno.org.
And Facebook, Rock Juno?
Yes, just at Rock Juno.
Okay.
All one word, too, not separate words. I got that mistake made. Rock Juno, all one word.
And hashtag Rock Juno.
Yes, of course.
And again, that's the best thing our listeners can do right now to get become part of this network is to go and find you there.
Yes. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Tressa Millam and Taylor Shea, thank you both for coming on the show today. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
Keep being kind to kids in our community.
Be nice and have fun, and thanks for having us.
The Juno Arts and Humanities Council with KTOO Public Media present art classes, monthly not your typical sip and paint classes, the second Thursday of each month. And March's featured artist is local jewelry maker Sarah Ritter of Bronze Betty Finery. She'll guide us in creating a custom pair of earrings on March 8th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Louise Douglas Inn. All supplies included, no host bar. Tickets on sale now at KTOO, The Jack, and JAHC.org.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 5th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes after the hour. And now in the studio is Nicole Stellan O'Donnell. She is the author of Steam Laundry, among other works, and is the Alaska Reads author here in the state for the coming year or two, I should say. Nicole, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's so nice to have you here. So you came down, 49 Writers, you came down yesterday and did a class?
Yeah, I came down yesterday, did a workshop. I had a little book signing at Reading Retreat Books, and then I'll be judging Poetry Out Loud tomorrow night. So it's a little slew of events here in Juneau.
Yeah, and it's part of Alaska Reads,
mm-hmm.
right?
Can part you tell of Alaska Reads.
What are our listeners what that is?
Sure. Alaska Reads is a book tour that happens every 2 years. A living Alaskan author is selected and sent all over the state to meet readers. And the Alaska State Libraries are involved so that your book winds up in all the libraries. They had my book made into a Kindle ebook version so that readers can download it from the Alaska Digital Library, and then I get to travel around, do readings, give workshops, and meet readers.
And our listeners may remember Alaska State Writer Laureate Ernestine Hayes was your predecessor, right?
Yes, she was the inaugural Alaska Reads selection. So her book, Blonde Indian. And she traveled actually to Fairbanks, but unfortunately I was out of town when she came there, so...
Okay. And again, this is a collaboration between Fairbanks Arts Association and the Alaska Center for the Book?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, what's it look like when you go and do readings? Are you doing them in the schools, at bookstores, community centers?
It's a variety. I have been, I'm very open to working with all different groups of people. So I actually have readings scheduled, traditional what you'd envision a reading, a book signing, at libraries and at bookstores, but I've also visited the Johnson Youth Facility here in Juneau. I visited the Alternative School. So I'm going into schools and visiting lots of places. In home, where I'll go to one center for battered women's shelter, a shelter there, and do a workshop. So it's a variety of things.
Okay. And for the most part, are you reading out of Steam Laundry?
Yeah. For this one, since Steam Laundry is the selection, I'm working with Steam Laundry, and then the workshops I've been doing have focused on persona poems.
Okay. And it's a novel in poems,
yes.
I see it described as. So tell our readers what that means.
That means it tells a story from beginning to end, but in poetic verse, in poetic form.
Would you mind reading
sure.
the selection for us?
I'd be happy to. I'll read you the first one. This is called River Town, and the idea for this poem came when, I'm sure you guys have this feeling in Juneau sometimes, you're walking around and you look at the names on the street signs and you realize they were all the people who founded the place or have been here for a long time. And so this is a very Fairbanks poem called River Town. The men who became street names meet in a saloon in the afterlife. They raise glasses, clink, whiskey spills onto their dirty fingers. They smile and nod, bob their heads in the only agreement they have ever all shared. It's a pleasure to see the roads they cut through stands of willow paved. Whether they're in heaven, surrounded by dance hall girls, straps falling over shoulders, or they're in hell, sweating in starched paper collars, bones aching with regret, they're still with us, perched on poles, peeking out between the loops and columns of the letters of their names. The two brothers-in-law who intersect at the library in the Korean restaurant watch a man jaywalk, wondering if he ever sold out a partner or brought a bank to ruins. The bank president looks down from his corner onto run-down apartments. On Saturday nights, cruiser lights reflect off him as men in handcuffs shuffle through the winter's first snow. The rent collector snakes from first to third, disappearing before fifth. On that street, everyone locks their doors. When a boy jumps his bike over a curb and looks up, he thinks he hears faint applause. And the woman, signaling left on Isabel, feels an inescapable longing as the tick of the turn signal counts out her heartbeats, as if she had to sneak out of town in the middle of winter in a sled, hands clasped in a wolf fur muff. All of them wish they could climb back down, muddy their feet on the riverbank. But the afterlife, if anything, is green and reflective and perfectly still. Unlike the river, which so long after they bottomed out is still going in the same brown direction. So, that's
Thank you for sharing. That's the voice of Nicole Stellan O'Donnell reading from her novel. Do you call it a novel?
Or novel. I think I say novel and poems. Okay. I don't want to trick anyone into thinking they're going to read prose.
All right. So, Steam Laundry. That poem contributes to a larger story. Will you tell us a bit about that?
The story is the story of Sarah Ellen Gibson. She's one of the women who came to Fairbanks in 1903 when E.T. Barnett first founded the town. And when I went into the archives to do the research, I was reading the letters, had the little gloves on and all that, I found she had followed her husband, who promised that he wouldn't drink anymore or cheat on her when he went to Dawson, if she would come a year later. And when she went, she found out his promises weren't all true. So she ran away in 1903 with another man to Fairbanks. So I found some, you know, juicy soap opera material in the archives and went with that. So it tells that story.
Wow, this is interesting. And why did you choose to do a novel and poems rather than, say, traditional prose?
That's a good question. I don't know if I have a clear answer. I've always been a writer who writes poetry, so I started there, and then I tend to get stuck on the big idea, and it just grew and grew and grew. When it started out, I had written maybe 10 poems about a different character from history, and this just kept gnawing at me, like, oh, you should really tell her story, really tell Sarah Ellen Gibson's story, and I went back to it.
What do you think that was gnawing at you?
Oh, that's a good... I think there's a couple things. One is just my personality. I mean, in a way, going through archives is like socially acceptable eavesdropping. You know, you're spying on someone's personal stuff, and it's okay. They put it there. And then also I think I was just compelled to go back to her again and again, her personality, the events, and the idea that she wasn't one of those people who came out of the gold rush era with bags of gold. We always hear about those people. They were so successful, but there must have been so many people whose lives were just utterly destroyed. And so I was interested in hers because she was not a success in business.
And I think I read somewhere on your website that you're examining gender at that time.
Yeah, looking a lot at gender at that time. And things like, for example, she was diagnosed with cancer, and the doctor wrote on a prescription pad he wrote a note to her son that said, "Your mother's very sick. I'm sending her to Seattle for treatment. It's likely she won't come back." Signed the doctor, and then it said, "P.S., don't tell your mother this." And that was a really common practice in that time period, to think that women can't handle that kind of information. So it was really interesting to go through the archives and read all about that stuff as well.
What was that time like there in the archives?
Oh, my gosh. It was very focused and quiet for me, and when I say that the afterlife is green and reflective and perfectly still, it's a little bit like that for me. But also, when I wrote the book, I wouldn't have written it without the support of a Rasmussen Foundation grant, so I have to thank them again. But really, the reason was I had a one-year-old and a three-year-old, and I wrote an individual artist project award grant to ask if they'd pay for my daycare so that I could go into the archives. So it was a gift in two ways. I was diving into the letters, but I was also finding this quiet place that I wasn't experiencing in my daily life.
What would you say was the biggest challenge of writing this book for you?
Stopping. And that's really, because when you're writing a piece that's research like this, you can always say to yourself, oh no, I need to read more about this. I need to find out how shoes tied, or what were the buckles on a skirt like? And there's a point at which you have to cut yourself off and imagine some of it. And I had to do that. So it was difficult because I could easily procrastinate by saying I was doing research.
And I guess the flip side of that question, what are you most proud of?
Oh, that's a good question. It's been very interesting for me to be on the Alaska Reads Tour because the book came out in 2012, so I'm revisiting it now, and I'm actually finishing up another book. The revisions are due at the end of the month, so my head is there. And what I'm most proud of when I go back and read these poems is I feel like the voice that I wanted to express for each of the characters in whose voice I'm writing, I feel pleased with it now, you know, and not that I was dissatisfied before, but I've had some space to think about it and dive into a different piece of writing.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what you were teaching yesterday, right?
Yeah, persona. And that was why I chose that as a workshop, is writing in other voices as a way to free your own voice.
Okay. So Steam Laundry, where can we find it?
I know that Rainy Retreat Books has a couple copies on hand right now. It is also available at your library. Part of the program is that they make sure the book is in all the libraries in Alaska. It is available for free checkout on the Alaska Digital Library as well. And it's on, you know, it's a Kindle book as well. So, yeah.
And where can people see you next in public?
Let's see. I'm going to be at Poetry Out Loud judging and visiting. So come say hello, you know, come say hello there. And
doors open at 4:45 tomorrow here at 360 in the K2O building.
Oh, yeah. You have all the details. That's
right.
Perfect. So I'll be there. And then I'm going to head over to Haynes. They have a event at the Haynes Public Library later after I leave Juneau.
And so as part of this Alaska Reads program, for the next 2 years, will you be touring and reading?
It's actually, it happens every 2 years, but is a book tour. So
it
will end in March, the end of March, but we will, like, try and maybe throw in a couple more events. I'm also available to do Skyping with libraries throughout the state if anyone wants to do a Skype meeting. So it goes on probably through, it ends at the end of March, but we might add an event here or there. So it's really the book tour itself.
Okay. Your next book, You Are No Longer in Trouble?
Yes, that is the title.
Comes out in 2019?
2019, just about a year from now. It'll be released. It's from Marie Alexander series in prose poetry. So it's a different kind of poetry. And actually, this one is all true. And so I took off the persona and wrote about my true self.
And remind us what you do for a living when you're not writing.
When I'm not writing, I'm a teacher. So it is a book that deals with education. I was a principal's daughter growing up. It deals with my own education as a child, being a teacher in the various settings I've been a teacher.
Well, we're looking forward to that, too. Please come back and share that one with us. Where can people find you online?
NicoleStellan.com is my website, and I tweet at Steam Laundry.
All right, that's Nicole Stellan O'Donnell talking about her book, Steam Laundry, and upcoming Memoir in Flash. Is that,
yes, Memoir in Flash.
You Are No Longer in Trouble. She is the Alaska Reads author. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you for
your time.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. Pick, click, give. A great and easy way to support nonprofits in Alaska. You simply donate during your PFD application process. There are dozens of nonprofits that you can support in Juneau alone, including KTOO Public Media. The application period for the PFD begins January 1st and runs through March 31st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
Hey Juneau, winter is here. Come spend it on the mountain at Eagle Crest, Juneau's winter playground. The mountain is open now through Monday and closed on Tuesday and Wednesday. For the most up-to-date conditions, check out skijuneau.com. This message brought to you by Eagle Crest.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, March 5th, 2018, about 23 minutes until the top of the hour. Here in the studio now is Police Chief Ed Mercer to give us our monthly update on the Juneau Police Department. Chief Mercer, thanks for coming into the studio on this beautiful afternoon.
Thank you for inviting me. It just seems like yesterday I was in here about a month ago, and this shows you how fast time goes by.
Well, we appreciate you coming down and keeping us up to date on what's going on with the department. I always ask you, what's on the morning brief whiteboard this month?
I took the opportunity before I came in here today to pull up our crime stats on burglaries. And on our last talking, we talked about how that particular area has been high in our community. And for the month of February, we've had 29 burglaries. And with that also is a couple other statistics to share on vehicle theft. We've had 10 vehicle thefts during that time, and then we had about 9 of them where they were parked and just unlocked and people criminal trespassing in those vehicles. So pretty high numbers if you think about 1 month of 29 burglaries that are occurring in our community, and is concerning to me.
And before we went on the air, we talked a little bit about SEPTED, which we'll get to in a minute, but also just locking one's car.
Really, it's simple. Making your property and your vehicle a hard target opposed to a soft target, and by locking your vehicle. Exactly.
Okay, and then let's take it to the home, thinking about burglary and designing your property appropriately.
Sure. We adopted a program that's been around for 40 years called SEPTED, which is Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design. And the foundation of SEPTED is an acronym called SATS, and it's Surveillance, Access Control, and Territoriality. And in surveillance, it's more than just people looking out for you, although that's a good thing, establishing lookouts in your neighborhood, looking out for your property and stuff. But dealing with those environmental things to open up your property so that it's exposed so people see it. If people think that somebody's watching it, the likelihood of them hitting your house or your car is going to be a little bit less. Access control is really funneling your accesses to your property, like your walkway leading up to your house, keeping the front doors open and not open, but keeping it accessible so that when somebody wants to come up to your residence, they know a funnel and how to get in there. Then territoriality is making the appearance that somebody lives there and somebody really cares about it. And I'm pretty sure you heard about the broken window syndrome. If you have a broken window in a neighborhood and it doesn't get fixed, soon somebody's going to look at that and go, nobody cares about it. But if you keep it upkeep and make it look like it's being looked after and people care, it drops the ability of somebody coming along and victimizing you.
It seems like cameras are becoming commonplace in a lot of households.
We're seeing a lot of that. A lot of people are setting up surveillance around their house, which is a good thing. I think it is a deterrent in itself. But even more so, I kind of hit up on at the very beginning, is establishing neighborhood watches within your neighborhood. Knowing your neighbor, those type of things that's going to help out that you look out for. In those 29 burglaries, in several of them were cases where people leave town for a period of time and have somebody look after their residence. And lo and behold, somebody comes along, sees that it's not being used, the mail's left there, doesn't look like it, with all the snow we're getting, nobody's driving in there, and they ransack the home. And they're there for a while. And in the process, they take the keys of the car out of the garage and they drive off with the car, with all your property in it. So, you know, having an established responsible to look after your property, to be making it look like somebody's in it, is a good thing. The department offers a vacation watch where you could call up and say, hey, I'm going to be out of town. The home is not going to be anybody in it. In the event you see somebody in it, you might want to make some contact with them. But we rely on other people on their list to make sure that they're keeping an eye on their home as well. But it's just some ways to prevent your home from being burglarized.
Okay, if somebody wants to get on that vacation watch, they call the non-emergency number. Is that the best way, would you say?
They could call it. They could call in to JPD and say, hey, I'm going to be out of town between this time, and we'll put it on our watches so that our officers know that this home is vacant for this period of time.
How's recruitment going?
Recruitment's going pretty good. I would have to say that within the last month, we hired 4 officers, 3 of which were local officers. Those three of the 4 are just started the Public Safety Academy over in Sitka, so they're going through a 15-week training program over there, and in a week we're going to have the lateral officer starting in the field training program. So it is a constant thing when it comes to recruitment. We're continuing to actively recruiting people from our own community, or all around Alaska to all around the country. So it's always a good thing. It's a win for us when we were able to swear somebody in and hire them and send them off to the Public Safety Academy.
All right, last question, and then I'll let you go. It seems a big topic in the nation right now, active shooter situations, Las Vegas, Parkland, Florida. What's on your guys' radar about that? What are you guys thinking about?
Well, one of the things I think as a police agency, we want to make sure that we're prepared to respond in the event that it does happen here. It's used to be it doesn't happen in small towns or in our town, but the fact of the matter, Juneau is no exception to that. We're seeing that all over the country. So we take our training and our response very serious on that. Matter of fact, we had a 40-hour training block for all of our officers, and part of one of the disciplines that was put in the schedule was active training response, active shooting response. We also did the ALICE training. We wanted to make sure that even though you know, we're going around teaching people the ALICE training and how to be safe and how to get away from a threat, we wanted to make sure our officers understood what the ALICE program is all about as well. We are constantly trying to work with our school administrators. We've got 2 school resource officers in the schools. And, you know, we always try to keep our lines of communication open if there's any sort of threats. Interesting enough, I talked about this last week. In the majority of these cases where active shooting cases occur, the person or persons involved in this case exhibited some sort of traits. They said something, they did something, and it was people very close to them who knew that this person might be ramping up to go out there and do a horrific act, an active shooting case in a school, that they didn't report it. And we encourage people, if they have information on that, to report it, because we would work with the school administrators, we'd work with the parents, we would work with anybody we can to try to prevent a tragic incident happening in the schools.
If somebody did have a tip like that or saw some suspicious activity, what would be the best line of communication with you and your colleagues?
Well, I would, especially if it's in the schools and it's a one of the students, reaching out to the school administrator, reaching out to the school resource officer. If that's not the case, call our direct line and report it. We'll have an officer there to talk. I could tell you a year ago we had a threat in the school, and that information got to us, and we immediately reacted and worked with the school administrators, worked with the parents, and prevented any sort of violence happening in the schools.
That's the voice of Police Chief Ed Mercer here with our monthly update with the Juneau Police Department. Chief Mercer, thank you for coming down here today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Just one more thing. Another really good thing that's coming up here next week is the DARE graduation. The DARE graduation, yeah. For those kids. It's scheduled for March 13th at 6 p.m. at DZ School And this is going to be a district-wide graduation that occurs in the fifth grade class. We have a curriculum. We go out there and we try to teach the kids and help them deal with peer pressure and peer resistance and whatnot. So we're always happy to have this go on, this graduation go on, and award those students for going through this course.
All right, Chief Mercer, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
KTOO is presenting Paula Poundstone this March 8th at 7 at Centennial Hall. Doors open at 5 and SALT will offer refreshments until showtime. We highly encourage you to pick up your will call tickets in advance at the station this Monday through Wednesday during regular business hours. The night of the event, we'll be auctioning off a handcrafted stool by Dean Graber of Rainforest Customs. Paula will use it during the show, and she'll sign it afterwards for the highest bidder. More information at ktoo.org. See you March 8th.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on March 5th, 2018, about 8 minutes till the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host today, and on what is becoming sort of a literary edition of a Juno Afternoon, we now have author Vivian Faith Prescott and the executive director of 49 Writers, Jeremy Pataki, in the studio now. We're going to be talking about Vivian's talk, reading, discussion tonight at the State Museum next door. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. So, Vivian, 7 p.m. tonight, what can people expect?
Well, I titled it Textures and Mixtures, Layering and Combining in Writing, but basically I'm going to talk about the hybrid novel and also hybrid stories and poems and things like that, and using my own work as examples and some other work.
And your most recent is Traveling with the Underground People, is that right?
Yes, Traveling with the Underground People is a small poetry chapbook put out by Finishing Line Press, and I also have a short story-linked collection called The Dead Go to Seattle.
Okay, when you say hybrid, what do you mean by that?
I mean mixed genre and or mixed elements. So some of my poems have fiction, nonfiction, or they're blended. I even have one that's kind of done like a comic strip, a poem in a comic strip form, and I do collage, things like that. So,
interesting.
It's combining elements.
Okay, will you read a selection for us? And while you're getting ready for that real quick, Jeremy, 49 Writers, what's your participation in this literary weekend here?
Well, we're very lucky to partner again with the Alaska State Council on the Arts and the Juno Arts and Humanities Council tomorrow in the Poetry Out Loud statewide competition, and we were able to come down a bit early and do some programming here in Juno leading up to that. And so last night and yesterday we had some programming with Nicole Stellan O'Donnell, and tonight we'll have Vivian's event at the APK. And tomorrow, it all comes together with Poetry Out Loud.
And just a reminder to our listeners, Poetry Out Loud is open to the public. The doors open at 4:45. Really great event where it's the high school state finals all around the state of Alaska, where young poets will be competing for the state title and to go to Washington, D.C. So very exciting. All right, Vivian, do you have a sample of your work you can share with us?
Yes, this is called Google Sami. I'm part Sami, and this piece combines elements of fiction and nonfiction and a little bit of a Google search of all things. And I'll read it for you. Google Sami. She is not a myth, but a dark imagining. She is a dull murmur in the trees where the wind is praying its sorrowful primal story. But how does the story begin? With either the windswept tundra or here on this bridge hovering over Sitka's harbor. Beyond, there is no snowpack on the mountains this year. They say the world is melting. She knows how it feels to melt. She walks across the bridge to the coffee shop below. She stirs the black sky in her coffee. Her ancestors once stirred starlight. She opens up her laptop and searches for her anthropological self, her ancestral self, her historical self, her assimilated self. Skridfin, Sami, Sami, North Sami, South Sami, Mountain Sami, Sea Sami. Sometimes she is 2 seconds away from her people, or 3,458 miles, whichever is easier, whichever fits into this global revolving hypertext markup language spin. Sitka, Alaska, to Kaffjord, Norway, no roots found. Except she is a charged particle like the spirits in the aurora, she uses Google Earth. She's ever-present but appears and disappears, high-altitude atomic oxygen colliding, turning red. She wonders how many grandmothers and aunties and cousins you can search for back and forth in time before the shoe bands of your world weaken. And below, a woman stands alone, chanting in the morning's decimetry, sliding in and out of pitch, tightening her throat, her notes leaping up and down.
Thank you for sharing that. Stirs the black sky in her coffee. What a line.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You also have a PhD in cross-cultural studies, is that right?
Yes, I do.
I think I can hear that in your writing.
You probably can.
Tell us a little bit more about your Sami heritage, if you would.
Well, when I was growing up, we called ourselves Laps, which is not an appropriate use of the word for our Sami people. But I have relatives in Norway and in Finland. And my family came over not with the reindeer herders that came to Alaska, but a later migration over to this country. And they ended up in Michigan area and then Astoria, Oregon area, and then came up to Wrangell to fish.
And that's where you live most of the time, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, I live in Wrangell now.
Okay. And so remind us again what people can expect at 7 o'clock over at the museum.
I'm going to give a talk and a reading. And so I'll be featuring some of my work and kind of how to texture and layer your work using some of my storytelling techniques I learned about from my Sami heritage.
Is this aimed towards writers or would anyone enjoy it?
It's aimed kind of towards writers, but I think anybody will want to hear my stories.
Okay, that's 7 p.m. at the Andrew P. Ketchaveroff State Library Archives and Museum next door here in the Willoughby Arts District. I imagine admission is free.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Where can we find more information on 49 Writers, Jeremy?
The best place would be to check our website, 49writers.org. Look us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And talk to me tonight.
Great opportunity to meet you and Vivian at the museum. How would you just 49 writers in a couple sentences? What is it?
We're a statewide community of Alaskan writers and readers, and we do literary programming throughout the state in person and online.
Okay. That's the voice of Executive Director Jeremy Pataki. We are also hearing from Vivian Faith Prescott. Meet them tonight, 7 p.m. at the APK. Thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks.